The Air Force Institute of Technology, first of all, I just want to say, has been around since 1919. I think a lot of people are surprised when they learn how long this has been here. And it's always been in the Dayton area. They've moved around within the Dayton area, but it's always been right here. And there's always been this peculiar and wonderful confluence of things that makes sense for it to be here. This is where aviation really was born. The Wright brothers, you know, started flying on Huffman Prairie, just a stone's throw from where we are right now. And that sense of innovation and the pioneering in technology was one of the reasons that there was a base here early on. But not just a base. There was this bringing together the research part of this, Air Force Research Laboratories, their predecessor, the Materiel Command and their predecessor on how to acquire and sustain and operate these, and the education aspect of this, which is what the Air Force Institute of Technology is concerned with. And one of the things I like to point out that at a time when the technology was as primitive as wood, wire, and fabric, there were people who had a vision and who understood that this was such a thing that was core to us, this technology, that we were literally ultimately becoming a service born out of a technology, that these things had to be part of us. We couldn't depend upon other people to provide them, that they really need to be part of what we were doing, whether it was the education or the research. And so think about that. If that was true then think about how much more true it is now at a time when there's an incredible rate of change in technology, and we're finding ourselves flying and fighting in airspace and cyberspace now. So AFIT was born out of that and has remained committed to that vision of having a part of what we do in education, research, and in consultation, completely committed and focused to the defense needs of this country, and particularly as relates to the Air Force's mission to fly, fight, and win in airspace, in cyberspace.
A lot of times people think of 1919 and they go technology, an Institute of Technology. As you mentioned, it was a very different time.
A very different time. Like I said, in a revolutionary time, things were changing. But Thurman H. Bain, Colonel Thurman H. Bain, was the first commandant of the Air Force Institute of Technology. He was the one who also had the idea for it. And he realized and said, he said, no man can efficiently direct work about which he knows nothing. And he understood that this understanding completely this technology and its application to defense problems was absolutely essential, and that the education function and the research function was part of that and needed to be part of us. And so since 1919, that mission has evolved as we've gone into space. AFIT has produced many of the astronauts, including the first African American in space, Guy Bluford, who has both a master's and a PhD from AFIT. So we've been a little bit of an astronaut U. And now as we go into cyberspace, we're on the cutting edge of that, whether it's cyber graduate education, whether it's cyber developmental education, we're about to graduate our first class of what we call a continuing education of cyber 200 and 300 professionals. I know we'll get to that later, but that's just getting into what we're doing, because the AFIT mission, quite simply, just as the Air Force mission is to fly, fight, and win in airspace and cyberspace, our mission is to advance airspace and cyberspace power for this country, its partners, and their armed forces. And we do that by providing technologically or defense-focused technical education, research, and consultation.
I want to talk about those cybersecurity graduates, but before you do that, talk a little bit, because you've been there for a little bit, and talk a little bit about how times have changed, because, as you mentioned, times just feel like they're changing so quickly now. How do you keep up, and how do you make sure that the Air Force and the people you're putting out there keep up?
Well, we're fortunate here at AFIT in that we are truly unique, and it's one of the things that AFIT brings in terms of the value to what it does that no one else does. No institute is really quite like what we are. And one of the ways is that we are have a 50% military faculty and a 50% civilian faculty. And related to your question, how that helps keep up, the military faculty is not here for all of their careers. I mean, they have been out in the field working, operating in the field, working real-world problems.
They've been there and done it.
They've been there. They've done that. Now they're coming back into this educational research environment with that experience, bringing it to the classroom. At the same time, obviously, if it was just them rotating out, that would hurt the continuity that you need in an academic community to keep up with the current body of work and what's going on in the developments. So we're equally blessed to have a top-notch civilian faculty that provides us that continuity and are connected with what's going on in the world of academia and the world of research. And that balance together, along with the students that we get, they're just absolutely amazing, top quality in every way. And you bring all those things together, and then you focus them on current defense needs and problems. And it's a remarkable blend and a very successful blend in being able to do things very quickly to actually address real world needs. So I often tell people that, you know, this is not just about, yeah, this is about producing that future Jimmy Doolittle. Jimmy Doolittle, by the way, was a graduate of AFIT.
Huh?
But it's not that the long-term payoff is there, both in terms of the people and the projects they work on and the technology they're developing. But there's also an immediate impact. The students here are involved in research projects that are absolutely related to what's going on right now, whether it's mapping terrorist social networks in Afghanistan, working on an assessment tool to see simplify evaluating Afghan forces and their progress towards mission readiness, or working on a Hall effect thruster for a satellite that's going to burn xenon gas to save fuel in space. These things are immediate payoffs. They'll also bear long-term fruit as well. And when those graduates leave here, they're going to be going out not just to teach, some of them will, but most will be going out and they'll be taking this education immediately into a real-world environment and applying it.
We're talking to Brigadier General Walter Gavan. He's a commandant of the Air Force Institute on Technology out there at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in gorgeous Ohio. My producer will be very happy that I've given props to Ohio. She's a big fan.
And it is, let me tell you, it is quite beautiful right now here in Ohio.
Well, and my father-in-law has spent some time at Wright-Patterson when he was in the Air Force. So developing, I believe, parachutes. So all sorts of cool stuff going on. Let's talk about one of the really big changes that has to have gone on in the last couple of years has to be the cybersecurity world, which has just burgeoned over the last couple of years.
Oh, it really has. And of course, in 2005, the Air Force, Secretary of the Air Force added cyberspace to the Air Force mission statement. And that just tells you, that it's that important. Now, it's important to all of us. It's a domain that's a little bit more difficult to define than what we talk about when we talk about the air domain or the space domain. But at the same time, there's no doubt that it's absolutely integral to what we're doing and that we can't do the things, as an Air Force, for example, through air and space that we are doing right now, without being able to, operate through the cyber domain and to be assured of being able to operate effectively through the cyber domain, and in many cases to deny our enemies the ability to operate in that domain.
And you just graduated a set of folks focused specifically on cyber, and I want to bring in Dr. Reese because she's focused on that. Tell us a little bit about this program, what you do, and these graduates going out there, what are they prepared to do?
I think they're going to be prepared to operate the networks and understand what the potential threats are in the cyber arena, and I think that's very critical. I would like to follow up a little bit on the question of how do we keep on the cutting edge.
Yeah.
It is coming from the research activities we have, and I think it's important to note that in our graduate school activities, we had already begun research activities related to cyber and the cyber threat long before the Secretary had added cyber to the Air Force mission officially. Because as we were beginning to develop the network capabilities, it became evident to our faculty, again, those folks who'd been out there in the field, that there was going to be an emerging threat related to that.
And this was around what time frame?
In the early 2000s.
It's funny because I've been covering this IT stuff for 20 years or so, and it feels like in the last, 10, 15 years, all of a sudden people have really started to say, hold on, this really matters. This is really important.
And yeah, I think there was a temptation, as we always have, to view things narrowly, in just in terms of, well, this is information technology and that's all it is. And I think what has emerged, one, just through a realization of how this does permeate so much more, but is a more holistic view of what we're doing and how this relates.
So I think, because of that understanding then that we had developed our civilian and military faculty both in the cyber arena, then when it came time that these were much more operational activities, we had the expertise to be able to move out on these cyber 200, 300 courses, the short courses, so that we could understand what was the most critically important aspects of these cyber networks and the threats to them, so that we could focus the appropriate curriculum to be able to teach these folks what they need in a brief period of time to be effective out in the field.
And so these folks who just graduated, what kinds of things did they learn? What kind of classes did they take?
They were doing right. Let me differentiate a little bit between the 200 and the 300, just to kind of give you an idea. 200, we're talking more, captain level officers, got folks who've been in about 6 to 8 years, and we want them when they come here to have about a minimum of 2 years of experience actually working in the cyber domain.
And just to be clear, all these folks are Air Force.
Yes, this time. Now, I'm sure we'll expand more as we kind of get these courses going and off run, because obviously we have cyber professionals from all services and agencies operating in this domain, and we're very connected with all of the partners that we have, the National Security Agency, for example, as well as Department of Homeland Security, just to name two. So I anticipate even more in that. Now, 200, just in general for these courses, this is a kind of a blend of technology, policy, doctrine, legislation, but with some hands-on work as well. I mean, we're talking technology, the tactics and the operational art that actually go into this, how you apply cyber power. And it's not just how you apply it, though, but how do you acquire it? What are the capabilities? What are the limitations and vulnerabilities? And so during these courses, they're actually planning, directing, and executing defensive and offensive cyberspace operations, even as they integrate these with other aspects of air and space operations. And that's more of the cyber 200 level. Now, cyber 300, similar sort of areas, but now what we're talking about is a more experienced cyber professional. So we're talking majors, lieutenant colonels, folks who've been around 12 to 15 years, minimum of about 6 years of cyber experience before they come here. And this is not just officers, I'm saying officers, but we've got senior enlisted involved with this as well. Now, at 300 level, now we're going to look up, because they've been there working on the tactical operational level, we're going to bring them more up to the strategic level, and with a focus on the integration and application of these cyberspace capabilities in joint operations.
Ed, this is the first time you've done this. Lessons learned already. Do you alter these courses at all? Do you alter the kind of people that you have in there? Give us a sense as to lessons learned already.
Yeah, this is, as you pointed out, constantly evolving. And it's constantly changing, a rapidly changing landscape. So with each class, we've already done, before we did these classes, we did what we call beta classes, both open and closed. And these folks are teaching us at the same time we're teaching them. This is not one way. So when we got the feedback from these people who are actually out there, operators doing this, we're immediately incorporating that feedback as we've done this evolution through the courses to say, what didn't you get? Okay, I needed more technical information about how we do this, or I'm actually doing this in my particular job, and I could use more about this to bring it back. And so we're with each iteration, we change the course to meet the needs of the people who are going through it.
I think that constant change is certainly a feature of the Air Force Institute technology, and our research program is a piece of that, and we bring that every day to our educational programs as well.